Hey, I'm Mike Rubini, a musician and marketer coming to you from the hill of Italy, and you are listening to the Jazz Spotlight podcast with Jan Ilunga.
Episode 67.
Welcome to the Jazz Spotlight, the podcast that gives you the insight and tools you need to be in the music industry today. Artists, authors, and top music industry experts give you actionable tips that will help you promote yourself the smart way. Here's your host, Jan Ilunga.
Hey, hey, what's up? Jan Ilunga here, Jazz Spotlight Podcast, episode 67. I'm super, super excited about today's episode because, you know, every episode is a new adventure and there is always something new to learn. And today, I can assure you, you will learn about something that you haven't thought about yet. And it's something that it's kind of costing you potential fans, because let me ask you this. Have you ever been interviewed? It doesn't really matter by whom. If you've answered yes, then you probably have made that mistake and it cost you some potential fans. And today we talk about a strategy you can implement right away to turn listeners, viewers, or readers. So if you have been on a radio show or on a TV show or on a newspaper, for example, you can turn those people, that audience, into your fans. And this interview, it's a little bit longer than usual, but my guest had so many great tips to share. And my guest today is jazz saxophonist and digital marketer Mike Rubini of Fieldwork Social. And in this interview, he shared so many great strategies. We talk about Facebook advertising. We talk about automation strategies. We talk about funnels you can create to get new fans, to make them subscribers to your email list or buyers. We talk about a specific hack you can do to get more fans and more engaged fans on Twitter. And around the 48-minute mark, we really talk about how you can leverage interviews, as I said, to turn that audience into fans. And I really hope you will enjoy this episode. Like always, you find the links to everything Mike and I talk about at thejazzspotlight.com/episode67. And my final tip for you before you start to dive into today's content is make sure that you have some pen and paper or, you know, your Word document open or your Evernote, because Mike shares not only a lot of great strategies, but he also mentioned quite many tools. Many of those are free, by the way, that you can use to implement all these tactics right away. Okay, that's it. Here it comes. How to leverage interviews to turn readers, viewers, listeners into fans with Mike Rubini. Have fun. Hey everyone, I'm here with another great guest for another very, very useful and helpful episode of the Jazz Spotlight Podcast. And today we're going to talk about how you can leverage interviews to turn the listeners into fans. I'm sure that many of you have, you know, have had interviews on podcasts like my guest today, or maybe radio interviews, TV interviews. And usually you just, you know, there is people listening to you or watching to you and they don't do anything. In the best case, then maybe go on your website and or start to listen to the to your music if they don't know about you. But my guest is gonna tell us how you as a musician can leverage those interviews to turn those listeners into fans. And I'm super, super excited to have him here on the podcast, also because I know he's a fan of the podcast. It's with great pleasure that I welcome on the show Mike Rubini. Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Hey, Jan, how are you?
I'm fine. Hey, Mike, let me ask you a quick question. Should we do this in Italian or what do you think?
Oh, no, let's do it in English.
All right.
I know you speak, you know, fluent Italian, but Let's do it in English.
Yeah. I think it's better. Many of our listeners would be a bit pissed off if we were to do it in Italian.
Yeah. I mean, the Italian audience, I mean, there is an audience in Italy, but I think we can reach more people speaking in English.
Yeah,
definitely.
Okay, so you told us in the bumper that you come from the hill of Italy. So you are in Bari, in Puglia, and you have performed at the Umbria Jazz Festival. You're a musician.
Yes.
Can you tell the listeners a little bit more about your musical career and what you do?
Yes, sure. So I am a professional musician. I'm 23. And I started learning music since I was 4 years old. I play saxophone. Of course, I'm into jazz, but I also like classical music and contemporary music too. So I graduated here in Italy in classical saxophone and then in jazz music. And between those two degrees, I had the opportunity to fly out to New York to study at the New School for Jazz and Contemporary Music as a scholarship holder. And so, you know, I regularly play. I have my own quartet. We actually played twice at Umbria Jazz. This year I will be there too. And, you know, life is good. And I think it's very important for your listeners to understand that I am a musician, as probably they are, because most of the times, you know, marketers are just marketers and they are not really involved with music, but I do this every day. And so to give you, you know, a perspective of how I launched my brand, you know, while I was in New York, I decided to apply for an internship at the popular jazz website All About Jazz. And I set up all the social media channels and strategies for them, and they now they have a huge following. And so from that, I decided to ideate and create my brand, which is called Fieldwork. And by the way, the name came up from a contemporary jazz trio that I really admire, which features saxophonist Steve Lehman, pianist Vijay Iyer, and drummer Tyshawn Sorey. I don't know if you know these folks, but they are really good.
So kind of All About Jazz has to thank Mike Rubini for getting them started. And we're going to hear more. I know that you also have a great Twitter strategy that you're going to share with us. And guys, those of you who want to learn more about the musical career of Mike, you can go to mikerubini.com. And like always, the links to everything Mike and I talk about is in the show notes. And you mentioned Fieldwork. Can you tell the listeners a little bit more about Fieldwork Social? Because I think it's very interesting what you're doing there.
Yeah, sure thing. So Fieldwork is a digital marketing brand, and we are dedicated to help companies and individuals who are pushing improvised music in new, groundbreaking ways. Okay, so we do this by spreading the word about their music and building communities around it using digital marketing strategies that actually focus on listening. Okay, so we are working with jazz musicians, organizations, club, website, magazine, creative people who care about improvised music, and we think, you know, jazz and improvised music is awesome, and we want to build a community of people who think the same. And in terms of what we are offering and how we can help musicians and music business owners, I have a challenging perspective on digital marketing, social media, and I want to share it. So it may surprise you, but we believe that as a musician or a music business owner, you should spend a very, very limited amount of time on social media. And in fact, there are really only two options that you can choose in our mind. The first is you can read, you know, our free material and make social media work for you effortlessly so that you can spend the rest of the day on something you like and then can really move you forward in your career or in your business. So if you are a musician, that something could be, you know, writing the tune you wanted to write for the last 2 months. Finally, emailing that journalist to interview you and practice your instrument. I mean, I should know because while I was graduating here in the local conservatory, I used to study 8 hours a day straight. So there's little time to do anything else.
Yeah.
And if you are a music business owner, you already know that you should focus on high leverage activities that can grow your business, like emailing prospects, improving your website, all these things, or improving your product. So these are things that matter more than acquiring one or two additional followers on Twitter, or even 10. I mean, and these are things that you can do even if you are on a budget, and most musicians are. So this is the first option. The second option is you can outsource the whole social media experience to us and get your social media channels managed from pros who know the music industry very well. And this is option two. So if you decided to look into social media, you probably read either articles, blogs, etc., that probably say, you know, these are 10 tips to improve your Facebook cover. These are 5 principles of a good Twitter profile. These are, you know, all these tactics. And I don't have anything against this recommendation per se, but we usually don't do that because those are merely tactics and we believe in systems. So you see, the difference between tactics and systems is that tactics will hardly do any good for you and your music. In fact, you can have the best Twitter profile in the world, but how would that contribute to reaching more and more people with your music, with your message? How would that contribute to sales if you are a business owner? You know, so it is really easy to get caught in the mindset that, you know, I have to do everything. I should try that tactic and then adjust that I just listen on your podcast. Then I read I read another article and you know, I should try that. And we say things like it can't hurt, but actually yes, it can. So in fact, if you follow those blog advices, you may completely fill up your day with these things that quickly adapt, leaving limited or no time for your music. And we believe quite the opposite. You should have more time for your music, knowing that every other aspect of your career or your business is being taken care of. So I know you interviewed my buddy Andrew Epanov on this very podcast, and he said, you know, if you are a musician, there's a lot you can do yourself, and I agree. But first of all, you can do everything, and I want to stress this. Because also he said, if you aren't good at Photoshop, don't open the software itself.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's a good advice. The other thing about this is, yes, you can decide to invest some time into, for example, learning how to leverage social media for your music, but you should not learn random unconnected tactics. Instead, you should learn strategic systems that can move you from point A to point B. Let's say 0 sales to 20 sales, for example, that you can put in place and then forget about them. And so that's why we are a big fan of both automated system and outsourcing. Because I mean, Jan, I can talk tools all day, but really what's important is the result.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you, Mike. And also, I think that you've made your point very clear that, you know, it's not really about the tools or the tactics per se, but it's more about the system and kind of having a clear goal in mind.
So yes,
you shouldn't use social media just because other people are using social media. You shouldn't, like you said, for example, with Photoshop, or like Andrew said, I think it was about Instagram that he said, you know, if you're not very kind of visually inclined,
I mean, it applies to Instagram, really.
Yeah. I think it's very important to think about, you know, what you want to achieve and then start to choose the platforms and then not really focusing only on the tactics, but putting in place systems that can allow you to, for example, grow your fan base on social media and do other goals you want to reach without being, you know, in front of your computer 24 hours a day. Because as Mike said, I'm sure you have plenty of other great things that you'd rather do, you know, and not just sitting there and typing on your keyboard. And Mike, I want to ask you, you talked about, you know, automation, and I really like that concept. And it's something that I really, you know, implement, and I really kind of try to urge the listeners to implement. And I know you like to talk also about digital funnels. So can you tell the listeners a little bit more about digital funnels and, you know, how they can apply to a musician and his or her promotion strategy?
Okay, sure. So a digital funnel is a path that we specifically build and design for listeners in order to qualify them. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what it aims to convert selected and not random visitors of your website into fans for life. And so what does this mean, and how is that possible for a musician? Let me show you. So a typical funnel we use is made up of three channels, all combined with a systematic approach, okay? So the first channel is a channel to get targeted leads. The second channel is a channel to convert leads into buyers or subscribers. And the third channel is a channel to distribute your content to your fans, okay? So for the purpose of this podcast interview, why don't we look at a funnel where we use Facebook to get leads, your website to convert leads into subscribers or buyers, and iTunes and MailChimp to distribute content.
Love it. Great example. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. So the first step is attracting people who might be interested in your music. So let's say we use Facebook for that, okay? Mm-hmm. We can really easily set up an ad campaign on Facebook to target our potential audiences. So Jan, the first exercise I want your listeners to do, because we want them to take action, right?
Yep.
So think, what are your potential audiences? And I want you to come up with at least three potential audiences, and I want you to think about that in at least two separate moments of your day, or even two separate days, okay? Mm-hmm. So the question you can ask yourself to come up with these audiences is, you know, who am I trying to reach with with my music? And please don't say everybody, because of course music can reach everybody. But for our goal here, which is get more people to discover your music, I think it's better to first focus on people that are already comfortable with listening to similar artists. So think of it, if you play jazz, is it better to target a classical musician, or is it better to target a person who, for example, subscribed to a jazz magazine? So the questions you should ask yourself are there similar artists to me? What books, magazine my listeners read? Mm-hmm. What age are they, etc.? So I'll do an example, okay? So let's say I play a jazz guitar, and I've just put out my second CD, which is a tribute to Thelonious Monk, and I'm from Los Angeles, and I really admire Peter Bernstein and Kurt Rosenwinkel. Well, my three audiences here could be, you know, one could be people from 25 to 54 years old who are jazz aficionados who like Thelonious Monk, who live in my area. So that's a pretty defined audience. The other audience could be, you know, people from 25 to 45 years old who like Kurt Rosenwinkel and Peter Bernstein. The other could be people who play the same guitar as I do. For example, if I play Gibson, I can target other people who play a Gibson, mm-hmm. or they like the Gibson, okay? So the bottom line here is a lot of musicians try to reach other people who don't play music, so not musicians people, but they forget that, in my opinion, other musicians, they are their first market, because in fact, you know, I'm a musician and I believe in supporting music. So if you target me as your audience, I'll probably buy your CD, no question. So that works for music business owners too. So let's say I am the Blue Note in Milano, which I know you interviewed, you had in your podcast. So my potential audience is, being the Blue Note in Milano, could be, you know, people from 34 to 64 who work at pretty big companies in the area who like jazz. So notice I'm raising a little bit the minimum age here. I said 35 because I'm not sure, you know, that an 18 years old can afford an evening out at the Blue Note. Of course, I'm just assuming here. Another audience could be people in the area who like whoever is coming to play at the club. Let's say Pat Metheny is coming, I can target Pat Metheny fans.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can target a direct competitor. So, of course, these are just examples, and you can go really deep with targeting. But the point for business owners is they can reach specific people who are already interested in what they offer, and they should do it, and they should advertise continuously.
Yeah. Sorry, Mike, let me stop you there for a second, because I want to, you made some great examples, because you really emphasized the importance of the focus of the Facebook ad. So you made a couple of examples where you segmented different audiences based on age range or geographic area or musician or jazz magazine preferences. And I think that for the listeners, it's very important to understand the importance of the focus. Also because, you know, guys, Facebook ads aren't free, which means that you're gonna invest some money. So you want to make sure that your Facebook ad goes towards people who are likely gonna be interested in what you do. So I think that the examples you made, Mike, are great. Yeah. And I just wanted to stress again, you know, the importance of segmenting the target audience and really kind of narrow down the focus and not, like you said, try to reach everybody.
Yes. And these things you can do on a budget, and I can guide you to that if you want. So, a quick note to come up with potential audiences is if you really are struggling to come up with these audiences, you can also do a quick research on Facebook Insights.
Mm-hmm.
So assuming you already have a Facebook page with some fans, you browse to your page and click on Insights on the upper left corner of the page, and then click on the People tab. And there you can understand how old your current fans are, where are they from, you know, the language they speak, okay? All these things that are really useful. Of course, they are useful if you haven't altered data with, you know, that comes from previous crappy ad campaigns on Facebook. And maybe I'll tell you a story about that. So in the first period of our work relationship with our clients, we usually go and study everything about them. There's this client of mine. She is a very gifted jazz singer, and she lives in the USA. But when we looked at our Facebook Insights, I saw a lot of fans coming from Brazil. And the first language they would speak, of course, was Brazilian. So was that maybe she did a Brazilian song or something?
Okay.
No. it was due to previous bad targeting.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you are targeting the right listeners. That's the advice.
And Mike, sorry, let me ask you this question.
Sure.
What do you think, for example, let's say now you are in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to plan a tour, let's say, in Australia for a couple of weeks, would you invest time and money in setting up a Facebook ad campaign that targets, you know, people in that country? Or what do you think? You know, I'm thinking especially for the listeners who are maybe touring quite a lot, are going to be, for example, in different countries, or in case in the States, in different cities or different states. What do you think? Is it worth investing some time and money to set up?
I'll reply with a quote from Henry Ford.
Okay?
The quote says, "A man who stops advertising to save money is like a man who stops a clock to save time."
I like it.
So, I mean, if you really look at your career as a musician, as a business, you know, a lack of advertising usually indicates that a business must be struggling, okay? So whereas a business that continues to advertise is perceived as being competitive, you know, committed to doing business. So, of course, I mean, assuming your gigs are paid and all this thing, of course you can invest a little money on advertising, If I was to play in Australia, of course, for example, I can target, based on the music, maybe I can target Lee Konitz fans in Australia, for example. Okay? And you don't have to spend a lot. I mean, you can do that and really advertise for $10 or $15. I mean, it's not that expensive if you are doing it right, of course.
So, good point.
Yeah. Now that you have come up with your audiences, in fact, it's time to test them. So my advice is to start small and try to boost some posts of yours on your Facebook page to see if the audiences you came up with are responding to your content, okay? So you go on your Facebook page, you can see that at the bottom right of each post, there is a button that says boost post, okay? So you click on that, and in the audience panel that will appear, you choose people you choose through targeting, and then you click on create new audience. And obviously, you fill up that section based on the characteristic of your audience that you just came up with. And you want your ad to run for 7 days. And then you basically boost the post for no more than $5. Okay, $5. So if you do this for each one of your audiences, you are spending $15 in total to do this testing. Okay. So after you test those audiences, maybe you identify one in particular or two who are performing better than the others, okay? So now you can go ahead and create a Facebook ad campaign for each of these audiences. And I have advices for these two. So what I suggest is to focus solely on click-to-website and website conversion campaigns, okay? Mm-hmm. So don't buy likes. And to start, you want to place your ad in the newsfeed only. So remove the right column and the mobile option. And change the headline. You want to format the text of the ad using something natural. Don't be too silly. But for example, you can use some social proof showing, why the visitors or the reader should care. So maybe you got covered by an important music magazine, maybe you won an award, whatever, okay? So you also want to format the link text, and my advice on that is focus on the benefits of whatever you are selling, and you also want to have an image. You can do you can format an image using Canva, mm-hmm. for example. I know you talked about Canva on your podcast.
Yeah, great tool. Yeah.
Yes, and because there's also the rule about the text, it doesn't have to cover more than 20% of the image. Mm-hmm. And there is also the possibility to choose a CTA, a call to action. And from my test, I think that learn more is the call to actions that perform better.
Okay, learn more.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then you want to narrow down the market according to the audience's characteristics that you just came up with. Okay, so the audience that perform better, you copy that characteristics into this campaign. Okay. So now something you should have in mind while doing this is, be patient, because it can take a day to 6 months to get your online advertising to be profitable. And not every advertising channel will work for everyone, okay? Mm-hmm. So, but at the same time, profit is all that matters, okay? So if you are spending but not making money, you should stop, okay? Because I know cash flowing campaigns are the stopping point for many, many business owners. And my advice is to set a daily budget. For example, you can set a daily budget of $3.33. So this will ensure you don't spend more than $100 per month. Okay. So this is, and this is the first channel of the systems. Okay. A channel to get targeted leads. Okay. Now, if you want, we can move on the second channel of the system,
sure.
which is a channel to convert those leads into buyers or subscribers. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now, at this point, you are probably wondering, hey, Mike, I understood that I have to advertise to these targeted audiences and all this stuff, but what should I share? So the answer is very simple to me. And you should share links to your website. Okay, so it can be a link to your index page, a link to a specific page of a specific campaign, for example, where potential listeners can listen to a particular song. So why this model works? Because we are going from a rented space, social media, to a known space, mm-hmm. your website. So basically, while you have no or limited control on social media, in fact, Facebook algorithms keep changing, all this thing. You have full control on your website. So it's better to focus on something you have full control on, which is your website or your mailing list. So in our job, we also fix or design a website for our clients so that it should be easy to sell something on a particular website. So you'd be surprised to see how many musicians don't have a link to buy their music on their website. I mean, it's crazy. I know you talked about that with Rose Barber.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you should use a very simple model, which is have your listeners consume some music first and then ask them to support your music. Mm-hmm. I mean, it all it takes. I would encourage your listeners to advertise, as we explained before, to a simple page. And in this page, there should be a picture of you, maybe, okay, some music, a message from you that says, if you like what you hear, please support my music. You can do so by joining my club, and it's completely free for you, or by downloading a digital version of my entire album on iTunes. You put your signature there. You put two buttons, one that says join the club and the other that says support my music on iTunes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to really, if you want to stay really basic, this works very well for some of our clients. But there is something you can improve. So when people come to your website, not all of them are ready to buy from you, okay? So basically they have two options. They buy because they actually like what they hear, and this is option one. Or option two, since they are lazy, or skeptic, or they just want more time to get to know your music, they will just leave your website. Okay. So what happens to these people? In natural conditions, you just lost them. Whereas if you collect their contact information, you could expose them to your music and sell them something in the future. So in the case I mentioned, both buttons are set up to show a pop-up window in which you can collect the visitor's email address. And that means that both people who buy and people who don't subscribe to your mailing list, okay? So I usually also set up what's called an exit intent pop-up.
Ah, yeah, I know about it, yeah. Can you tell the listeners, maybe some of them, they don't know about what an exit pop-up is? I think it's a great tip.
Yeah, this is a pretty technical thing, but mainly this is a window that shows up when visitors try to close your page, okay? And for all of this, if you're looking for tools, you can use lead pages. Mm-hmm. I use lead pages.
Yeah, me too.
I believe you can use Unbounce too, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But there are tools out there. Lead pages is really not that expensive, and they are really great. So one other thing I keep in mind when designing website for this purpose is I'm also a very big fan of having WAR, or maximum two CTAs, call to actions per page. So it means that we design the website for our clients, having in mind their goal for that particular page. And for example, you can decide that you want the index page to make a first impression, and then your goal for that page might be redirect visitors to listen to some of your music. So that should be the only call to action on your page. Of course, you can change the words, but the action you want your audience to do should be the same. And that is the second channel of the funnel. So to recap, at this point, you should have tested your audiences, have at least one ad campaign running, and you have that campaign pointing to a specific page of your website with your message asking for support, okay? Am I talking too much?
You couldn't have been any clearer. No. The reason I don't have any time limit. Think you're giving very useful insight. I just want to make a quick note about lead pages for those who don't know about lead pages. I also use lead pages, so it's great that you mentioned it. I think I mentioned it also on the resource pages on the website. And if you guys want to learn more about it, you can go to thejetspotlight.com/leadpages. And it's a software that allows you to do so many different things. And the exit pop-up is just one of those. You can edit it, for example. I think this is a great tip. I just quickly want to share this. Has it ever happened to you guys that, you know, if you type your website, for example, microbini.com, and then you put slash and you type in some random letters, you end up on the 404 page and, you know, it just says, sorry, the page couldn't be found, whatever. Mm-hmm. What you can do with lead pages is that you can turn that 404 page into a page that actually has a, for example, an opt-in form to your newsletter, which means that if one ends up on your 404 page, the page will say, sorry, the page couldn't be found, but, you know, kind of don't leave empty-handed. You can get this. And you can see it in action if you go to thejetspotlight.com/ and type in whatever you like, just some random stuff, and you will see it in action. So sorry, Mike, that I kind of barged in, but I wanted to tell the listeners a couple of things about lead pages, because I think it's one of the best tools out there.
I agree, and no problem. I'm guilty of not doing these things for myself. I mean,
well, for, now, for my, now my personal, there's a tip.
For my personal website, for my music website, but I do this for my agency website. So let's now move on the last channel of the funnel, which is all about the channel to distribute your content. Okay, so the question here is, where should my buttons point? Okay.
Yeah.
Again, it's very simple. Of course, your support my music button should point to iTunes. And of course, you can use a bit.ly link so that you know exactly how many people clicked on the button. But the beauty of collecting email addresses in the process is that you can now have your own mailing list and contact these people in the future. So for that, I use MailChimp because it's free up to 2,000 email addresses, even if their automation is not free. But many use Weber. I mean, I think you use a Weber, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I do also because, you know, I really like the automation aspect of Aweber. But I think both are both great services. Yeah. And
there's also other stuff, other similar services like Constant Contact, Drift.
Yeah,
there are many out there. And these there are, you know, so much ESPs, email service providers out there. Just choose one, and now you can nurture your relationship with the ones that bought and the ones that didn't buy. Okay. And so now that we have this system in place, you only have to review it once in a while, and it will work for you even when you sleep. Of course, keep in mind that this is just a funnel, and you can create many more funnels, different type of funnels, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think we covered all the three channels of the funnel, and I think this is something your listeners could really set up in one day. They just can decide to spend this time, one day to do this funnel, And I mean, I have fantastic results for my clients. So I hope they will experience fantastic results too.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, as you said, you know, once that this funnel and this system is in place, it doesn't take much to kind of tweak it here and there. Yeah. So that you change a couple of things. I think that maybe what takes kind of the biggest amount of time is the first step. So kind of the research and, mm-hmm. you know, creating the target audience. Yes. I think maybe that's the part that it's more time consuming. But then when it comes to the second and third steps, as you just explained to us, I don't think it takes much time. Great, great. I'm loving this, Mike. I really love this. And let's talk for a moment about Twitter. I know that you love Twitter and I follow you at Mike Rubini. I love mm-hmm. Twitter as well. And I know that you have an automation hack that you want to share with us about Twitter. So do you want to tell the listeners what that hack is and what it can do for them?
Yeah, sure. Sure, sure. So one of the most common mistakes musicians make when it comes to social media is that they focus their attention on the wrong metrics, okay? Mm-hmm. So Facebook like, Twitter followers, posts per day. And these are vanity metrics that you can brag with your friends at a pub, you know, but, you know, I have 10,000 Facebook like, 10,000 Twitter followers. Okay, now what? I mean, you have to leverage those connections, okay? You have to leverage those likes, those followers. And so what is really important on social media is engaging with other users, building relationship, joining conversations. So I know you hear that all the time, but you don't always know how to do it, okay? So I came up with a strategy that it's useful to start conversations on Twitter, okay? So this allows you to start conversations on Twitter and you are not there, okay? You are practicing. And so this method is quite easy. Will not take a lot of time to set up, and you can customize it for your needs. So I'm a big fan of automation when it feels human, and we don't want to spend time on something that drains a lot of energy and time, you know, while can be easily outsourced. Mm-hmm. So, but at the same time, we don't want to look and sound like robots. Okay. So, what I did is I created an automatic tweet to welcome each new follower on our Twitter account. Okay. So in my tests, I found that it looked too spammy and unprofessional if each new follower was getting the same message. So I came up with a tactic which allows you to diversify your message for different audiences. And of course, this is the tactic. So you want to basically put this in a system, okay? Because this solely, it's good, it works. But it can really work better if it is combined with the strategies for your Twitter account. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we only want to welcome users that have a large Twitter following to increase our chance of acquiring more followers. So the basic mandate is if users with a large following reply or retweet our welcome message, we have a higher chance that follow our conversation and hopefully follow us. Okay. So to do this, I implemented a tactic with Zapier, which is along with If This Then That, is my tool of choice when it comes to the internet automation. Okay. So I don't know if you are familiar with this. I think you are.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I actually have watched a virtual summit this weekend, and one of the topics was automation for podcasts, automation tools for podcasts, and talked a lot about both If This Then That and Zapier. So I definitely, I mean, I knew about them already, but then after that virtual summit, I know even more. But can you tell the listeners, you know, a couple of things about Zapier in case they don't know anything about it?
Yes. So Zapier virtually connects different services on the internet so that you can combine the two of them. Okay. So it works in a mindset where if something happens, and they do something, okay, for you. So, for example, if I have a new follower on Twitter, okay, then send this message, okay, to them. This is the basic mindset, okay? So I won't go in the step-by-step process in this, but you can read my my article if you like. I think you would have that in the show notes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, everything we mentioned, also, you know, the two links to Zapier, Lead Pages, If This Then That, Mike's website, Feedwork Social, everything is going to be there in the show notes.
And so what I did is basically with Zapier, I made a new Zap, and this is, they call it this automation. Automation services, they call it Zaps. So I make a new Zap using Twitter, and then so when a new followers when my account has a new follower, I basically see if this account has more than, for example, 3,000 followers. Okay. And if this account has more than 3,000 followers, I proceed and an automated message goes out to this user. Okay, so if you Yannick, let's say you have 10,000 followers, okay, and you follow me on Twitter, okay, so this system basically sees that you have more than 10,000 followers, and what it does, it replies to you and mentioning your handle or Twitter handle, and will say, "Hey Yannick, thank you for following me. How was your day?" For example, okay, and you can craft these messages as you like, and of course, if you find these engaging, you probably reply to me, or maybe you retweet the tweet. So this has some kind of virality in it. Okay, so you can get creative with this, and of course remember that the messages should be under 140 characters. but since we don't know how long the name or the Twitter handle or of our new followers will be, I think you should keep your message even shorter, so maybe 100 to 110 characters, okay? And then of course you want to start your welcoming tweets to be seen by all your followers, but starting your message with a Twitter handle, okay? So I mean, with this tactic, you will automatically check for new followers every 15 minutes. And if a new follower says from the parameter you set, maybe more than 3,000 followers, it will automatically welcome them from your account using the message you defined, okay?
And Mike, sorry, let me ask you this. In your case, have you set up also a different welcome message if the user who starts following you has less than 3,000 followers, or?
Yeah, you can experience with different target audiences. Maybe you can craft a message for people who have a following of 1,000 to 3,000 people who have a following of less than 1,000 will get another message. Of course, you should go and really understand what your audience. For example, I mean, I don't advise to do for less than a certain amount of followers, because if you are welcoming all of your new followers, of course you will be not too spammy, but not ethical, okay?
Yeah, and also it doesn't, if we think about it, we started with the goal in mind that you said, that the idea is like to get the person who has a certain amount of followers to engage with us by a retweet or favoring the tweet, so that his or her followers sees us and maybe they draw interest. So definitely makes sense that we wouldn't craft a zap for someone who has, for example, 5 followers.
Yes, it's not. I mean, my advice is this: go to some service that allows you to understand how many followers you have that have a followers a following of more than, for example, 50,000 followers, okay? And then craft a message only for these people, okay? So that when you have a new followers that has more than 50,000, your chance of having a retweet from him or are higher, okay? And of course, I mean, it's not that that you don't have to spend time Twitter at all, because of course if they reply, I mean, there's no automation there, you should reply yourself. But it's a start. I mean, you don't have to be there and welcoming these people, because it is being taken care of for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm liking this. Okay, let's talk for a moment about the kind of what gave the title to the episode. So how to leverage interviews to turn listeners or viewers into fans. And you wrote a post about the topic, and guys, you find in the show notes, especially because you have put a couple of graphics that, you know, are not only an example of lead pages in action, but are great examples of something you guys can follow very easily.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yes. And about that, do you mind if I use these strategies right now with you?
Absolutely not. Please do that.
So please ask me where on the web your listeners can find me.
Absolutely, Mike. So what is the best way for the listeners to find you online? So guys, before Mike answers, Guy, really, if you are distracted, now stop whatever you're doing. This is really the time to focus, because this is a great strategy that can really help you, you know, turning listeners or viewers into fans. Okay, Mike, again, what is the best way, what is the best place to find you online?
Okay, Jan, thanks for asking that. And actually, we have prepared something unique and special specifically for your listeners. So if they go to www.fieldwork.com, that's www.fieldwork.com, and / Jan, and that's YANN, they will able to join my special bootcamp with lots of free material regarding what we just discussed today. Great. So that's completely free for your listeners. It's a gift that I want to give your listeners, just to bear with me today.
Mike, that's great. So fieldworksocial.com/Jan. And again, guys, everything in the show notes. So make sure to go to the show notes and click the link so that you can join Mike's.
So, Jan, did you see what I just did here? Did there? How do you think the listeners will feel hearing that?
It would be great. And you know, I think that what's great about this strategy you just used is that, you know, it really kind of gives the listeners a follow-up to the interview. So you see what I mean? Even if, let's say, if this was a radio interview, for example, you know, what is the next step for the listeners? And I think that 99% of the musicians, they just, you know, leave it at that, or maybe say, okay, come to my next gig. But with this strategy that you have just showed us in action, people have something to, you know, to do after the interview, and then they become your fans, and you have now a new email address, a new contact, a possible buyer for the future, a new fan.
Yeah. So let me dive into this a little bit. So the idea is the interview that you do in radio, TV interviews, podcast interviews, any kind of interview, will probably reach a point where the interviewer will ask the interviewee, which is you, the musician, about his or her availability on the web for the audience. We know where the audience can find you online. So now, what everybody does is they basically share the URL of their website, which is, you know, better than nothing. Some other musicians decide to share their social media information, and this is, I mean, real bad, because you don't want to do that unless you have systems in place on your social channels to grab visitors' basic information. So, because, as I said earlier, you don't have full control on your social channels. So instead, what I suggest is creating a custom page on the artist's website with an incredible offer and call to action for the listeners of that radio. So then when the time comes in the interview, you share a special link to that page. So I just gave away the script with you today, but basically you can say something like, my team created a special page specifically for your listeners. So if they go to your website.com/radio show name or host name or whatever.
Sorry, Mike. Sorry. I just want to interrupt you to give one tip that when it comes to, you know, Mike just said, for example, the radio show name or host name, just make sure that it's something that people can remember easily. So if there, for example, if it's the host name or the radio show name, it's great. You know that people are going to remember it, are not going to have doubts about how to spell it.
Yes. So. And also I would also say that it shouldn't be long because, there is an higher chance that people will misspell it or type it the wrong name. So, for example, today, for this interview, I created fieldwork.com/Jan instead of fieldwork.com/thejazzspotlight. Because the Jazz Pod is a long name, Jan is just more easy to remember and easy to type in the URL. Okay, so you can say something like, "Go to my website.com/radio show name, and your listener will be able to download 3 songs for free from my latest CD, including your most popular song." And this is completely free for them. It's a gift for you and your audience. Every song comes in high quality audio. I mean, you can really get creative here, okay? In terms of what you are giving away, okay? And then listeners will hopefully go to that URL. And what we'll do is that listeners will go to that URL and they will find a special personalized page that you built in advance, and you can build this with lead pages, as you mentioned, with an email opt-in to access all the products, okay, all the audio that you want to give away, okay. So there is a page with an image of you that says, "Hey, listeners of the radio show name, here's a gift for you. Download my song, okay?" And then there is a button that says download song. And when you click on that button, a window will show up. And this is a typical lead pages pop up. Okay? And it says, almost there, please complete this form and click the button below to begin the download. Okay. So you enter your email address below to start the download. Again, it's 100% free, and there is another button that says download song. So what the listeners do is actually they put their email address in there and they click on the button, and then the songs that you are giving away are automatically served to them. Okay, and so this is a strategy. The strategy, you have converted many listeners who basically listen to your music and then forget about it into potential fans, okay?
I love it. It's a great, Mike, it's a great strategy. And again, guys, to see it in action, go to the show notes and click. You will see a heading that says Join Mike's Bootcamp. You will find the link there. And it's a, you know, it's a great example of something you can do, something very easy you can do to something it's very easy to implement, something great you can do to turn, you know, listeners of a radio show, or even, you know, if you're being interviewed for a festival, for example, they have the camera. It's a great way to turn those listeners or viewers into fans. Mike, do you have one final tip for the listeners? If, you know, kind of, we talked about quite a lot of things, but if you were to give one final kind of takeaway for the listeners, what would that be?
Okay. So, my final advice should be, listen.
Mm-hmm.
As simple as that, because, I mean, listening is just an important part in music, and it is an important part when it comes to social media and to understanding your audience and to selling your stuff, your songs. It is just an important part of everything you do in your life, really. So, I mean, I often end up with clients who don't listen, or musicians who don't listen really on social media, because what they do, they actually a lot about themselves. And I have a lot of case studies on this issue, and it is an issue that actually involves, and it's true also for great musicians, like I have a study on Herbie Hancock, who does this, and basically, the if you go to their Twitter profile or their Facebook profile, I mean, their updates are really, I am at this location, you know, I'm about to whatever. Come see me. Come to my concert. I was there. I mean, it's all I. Mm-hmm. We. I mean, it's all about themselves. And I mean, of course, if you are a great star, you can do that. But of course, if you are not at that level, you want to be more human, more engaging, yeah, just listen and remember that social media actually is not a speaking platform, but much rather it is a listening platform.
Mm-hmm. I love it, Mike. I want to thank you so much. And guys, if you're on Twitter, make sure to type Mike Rubini. That's MikeRubini, and connect with Mike on Twitter for conversations and more tips. Mike Rubini, again, thank you so much.
Yo, Jan, thank you for the opportunity. It has been a great time, and I'll see you in Helsinki, maybe.
Yeah, let's hope. All right, everybody, we are back. Mike, what can I say? Thank you, thank you, thank you. Grazie mille, I say it also in Italian. Thank you so much for being on the podcast and simply rocking this episode. You shared so many great strategies, so many tools. Many of those are free. And I quickly want to talk about two tools. The first one is Lead Pages. We've talked about it in the interview, and I just want to tell you that if you want to learn more about it, you want to check it out, you can go to thejazzpodcast.com/leadpages, which is an affiliate link. And in case you decide to purchase it and test it out through that link, I want to thank you for doing that. The second tool I want to talk about, it's called PrettyLink, and it's a plugin for WordPress. So if you're running your website on WordPress, this is for you. Maybe you've noticed throughout the podcast when I say, for example, the show notes, you can find them at thejazzpodcast.com/episode67, like in the case of today. Or I say, you can find that episode at thejazzpodcast.com/episode20, whatever the number may be. And maybe you have been wondering how I do that. Well, I'm not any wizard. I just use a plugin called PrettyLink. You find it obviously in the show notes. And what that plugin does is that it lets you turn a URL into a customized URL. So let's say, for example, you've written a blog post about your new record, and your new record, it's called Sunrise. Okay, so the title of your post, it's maybe, you know, our new record hit the stores in 2 weeks, something like that. And maybe the URL in the web browser says what your title says. Okay, guess what? It's maybe difficult for people to remember to go to yourwebsite.com/all that long title. So what you can do, it's use PrettyLink. It's as simple as that. You copy your URL, so the long one, you copy that, you paste it into PrettyLink, and you can type whatever you like. So maybe it could be Sunrise. And what happens is that once you create that custom link, people will type in yourwebsite.com/sunrise, and they will be redirected to your page with the article, which URL is actually, you know, yourwebsite.com/the long thing you have put there. So again, Lead Pages, PrettyLink, you find everything in the show notes. And the last thing I want to tell you today, it's about the next episode. So maybe you remember in episode 65, where we talked about artist management with Sandra Marcy, and she mentioned a specific artist who really does it all. She's a singer, she's a performer, she's a festival director, and really, she's incredible. And she's gonna be here on Thursday to talk about how you can organize a music festival as a do-it-yourself musician. So if you have ever dreamed about organizing your own event, whether it's a 2-day festival, 1-week festival, 2-week festival, you're gonna learn more about that on Thursday. Yanni Lunga here, and this is the Jazz Spotlight Podcast. Like always, thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll be back with you on Thursday. Take care.